The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. This is episode number 93. I'm Dave Schmolensen, aka the Schmo. My co-host is
Helene with Helene Sports.
And today's guests really need no introduction. Everybody knows who they are. We have the assassin baby, Brandon Moreno, the number one flyweight in the world, the people's champ. Yes. And we have Jason House representing Iridium Sports, his manager. Yes. And what, 107 fighters in the UFC now?
I think so. Maybe 108. We put one in last week.
Let's go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you guys brought this in right when you walked in the studio, these limited edition Assassin Baby represented gloves. This is fantastic, by the way. Yeah. I can't wait for you to autograph these, and we're going to put
these
up.
Man, let's go. I'm ready.
We need to frame them.
We're going
to
frame them. They're going to go right out there in the studio. Yeah. I mean, this is the first time we've been given gifts. Or usually we just give the gifts. You guys gave us the gifts today.
Yeah. No, I was talking to Jacob. I was like, hey, let's get him a pair. I think he'll really like it.
Oh, I love it. So it's going to stay right here for the show. Thanks for joining us today, guys. We appreciate you.
Heck yeah. No, thanks for having us.
Of course. I mean, look, it's been a week and a half maybe since the big fight. And what really stands out to me is the second the fight was over, we're just joking about it. Not joking about it. We're trying to figure out what the right terminology is. Quadrilogy. First time ever. Yes. And UFC history, maybe fighting history, combat sports history right here. Crazy.
I think it's the first time ever, and then also the first time ever consecutively, right, to do this many of the same fight.
I mean, Brandon, I mean, you've spent so much time with this guy. I mean, this is crazy. It's not Kai Kara France, it's not Askar Askarov. That's not what everyone's talking about here, which is the number one contender fight. It's you two rematch.
Man, it's crazy, right? How the life is going right now, because after the second fight against Davison, the media asked me, like, hey man, like, what do you think if you want to see him, like, in the future? Like, and that moment I said, like, man, I don't know. Obviously, I can't say no, definitely, because you never know what happened. But I beat him, in a very dominant performance and everything. But we did the tier one. I lost the decision. And, everything looks like, the 4-1 looks like with a lot of sense right now. So it's crazy, this life, but, man, I'm ready for the challenge. And obviously it's, like, weird because I'm a little bit tired of this guy. But, hey, he has a title, and I want the title always, right?
Are you more tired of him or are you more tired of his team?
Oh, good one. I don't know. You tell me. No. I mean, I say this right now, and like I said before, I still believe in the guy is nice. The guy is a good guy. He's a family guy, as me. But he picked one way to try to sell this fight, the opposite side as me, because, I don't like that, man. I'm boring to try to sell the fight and the trash title to me. It's like, I feel like I don't need it, you know? And that's awesome because I can see how the people can recognize all my style, how I am with the people. Because if I'm here talking with you, and if somebody talk with me in the street, this is the same guy. And I prove that, and I show to the world I'm the same guy with the media, with the people on the street and everything. And that's, I'm selling fights just to be like myself. And that's awesome because, man, I don't like to do something more in the cameras or something like that.
But I think that's what makes people love you so much too, because you're authentic, you stay true to yourself. But afterwards, when Davison, or I guess Waleed, his translator, said, you know, they want that quadrilogy, they want it in Mexico City, I'm curious to get both of your thoughts. Like, what were you thinking at that moment?
You know what? It's funny because somebody told me last week, actually, when somebody really believes he won the fight, they don't ask nothing about rematch. They go straight to the next page, right? So the guy start to talk about immediately in that moment about the rematch, and he started to say Mexico City. Was like, let's go to Mexico City. Okay, for me it's perfect, right? Because you know my people is there, and Mexico City is a hard place to fight for the elevation. No, but I can imagine like going to the locker room, like, hey, stop to say, look, don't say Mexico City anymore, like shut up and say other place like Brazil or United States. And then he went to the press conference that said Brazil, but UFC needed to cancel the event in Brazil. So maybe the fight is in United States, possibly, right? You never know. But man, I don't care, man. Obviously, I would love to fight in Mexico City because it's my place, it's my country. But at the end of the day, I understand he has the title, and I just want to fight for the title one more time.
I kind of feel the same way. I'm not too concerned of where the fight's at. I'm just want to get a date and start, you know, making some adjustments and prepare for the opportunity. For me, I was thinking, you know, Cinco de Mayo weekend obviously would be great because, you know, if it was in the States, it'd be a great weekend for us to have that fight.
And they can't have that card in Brazil because I think there's like a 2-week mandatory quarantine.
That's what I heard too. Yeah.
And I think yesterday Davison was talking to MMA Fighting about how much money he would kind of expect from that quadrilogy. So what are your thoughts on that? I believe he said 1 million.
Yeah. 1 million and pay-per-view points. No,
I always think of like Austin Powers, like $1 million, you know? I mean, hey, listen. I mean,
it's fine.
Yeah. Ask what you want to ask for. All I care about is that we get the fourth chance.
And it's crazy, too, because I think that was the immediate conversation. And we were talking before the podcast started. It wasn't Francis Ngannou. It wasn't Cyril Gane. Brandon, by far, in Anaheim had the largest pop. Like, you have so much respect. The people that are coming there to watch you. I mean, I remember it was the Arizona fight, too. And you were sharing that card with Nate Diaz and stuff like that. And now you and Nate are friends. It seems like no matter what your situation is, what you have done and your style of fighting and you being authentic and charismatic to yourself, you are a fan favorite at flyweight. You're doing something in the flyweight division that hasn't been done before, especially in terms of a popularity standpoint.
Man, and again, I love it. I love that idea because I go with the same. Like, I'm just want to fight. I just want to enjoy these kind of moments, like make fun with the media, you know, spend a good time in those moments when every single fighter, the most part of the fighters are like very stressful, like very serious because make weight sucks, like, you know, and being tired every day sucks, definitely. But I don't know, man, I'm just trying to be very positive every day and the people can see that. And I understand the part of Figueiredo talking about money because I feel like that is another thing, you know, because everybody wants more money in the life, right? Because it's a good skill to get your success in a kind of success in life. But I don't know. I feel like I have the fans by my side a little bit, but I don't care about money. I just want the title, right? So yes, obviously I want money, but I just want to fight against him. I don't want to put any excuses. I don't want to put like any obstacles in the middle of the way to get the title. I just want to give me the date, give me the title, the title again, the opportunity for the title, and that's it.
And obviously that's what's going to happen too, because I brought up their names earlier, Kaikar France and Askar Askarov, like until the way the fight played out and how close it was. And I obviously watched the fight. Round one, obviously that went to Figgy. Round two was yours. Round three to Figgy's. Round four to yours. And then the controversy would be in round five, how everyone scores it, where the knockdowns are and the control and everything like that. But just the way it all played out and just the way the scenario is, I mean, you have to feel like a winner.
And you know what? I'm trying to be very positive. I'm trying to keep some balance of this because if I'm still thinking like, no, I won that fight and I don't care nothing, like, I feel like I can stuck a little bit and don't watch my mistakes in the fight because I made mistakes there, man, and I need to go to the gym and put some work there and try to fix it. But at the same time, like, watch the fight again and watch, like, I really, really won that fight and that gives me a really good positive vibe, like, you know, I made mistakes, but I can do it, man. I'm still the champion. I need to work, but I'm just like, I had a kind of bad night, but man, it is what it is. I'm alive right now and I can do something in the future.
But seeing him for a third time, what surprised you this time that you weren't expecting going into the fight?
You know what? I mean, you know, I watched the fight before, like twice. I feel like I was the better fighter. I tried to finish the fight, you know, to connect the punches. But definitely, he had a better game plan. You know, he used his weapons. He used all the angles. You know, he started to move around the octagon. Waiting for me, and he connected three really good punches in all the fight. You know, he connected really good kicks too, and it is what it is. That works for him because the judges gave him the decision. You know, I need to work in base of that. Like, man, you know, you are very brave. You know, you are like very aggressive. Maybe try to take more control on that scenario.
For the upcoming quadrilogy, whenever that comes about, will there be any significant changes that you're going to make leading into that in terms of like your camp and everything?
And I thought you were going to train with Canelo when the Schmo interviewed you. You told me you were going to train with Canelo for the upcoming fight. Did you do that?
Man, I don't did it for this last one because I went for 5 weeks to Tijuana to my training camp there in Entram. And I was like very focused, you know. I love to get new knowledge when I'm out of camp. Like, I don't have a fight coming soon, so I can get new knowledge and try to do something different. But when I'm in, like, preparing myself for a fight, I'm just, like, go and do sparring. Go and do your strength and conditioning. Like, just go hard and that's it. So I don't do that before because I feel like that moment when I was like out of camp, I was like very busy, like going to everywhere, like going to Mexico City, going to Los Angeles, going to San Diego. I meet Canelo there, right? And when I had time, I start with the training camp. I'm like, okay, let's go. And when I was in my training camp, I was like very focused. Like, I don't want to put like any excuses because my training camp was amazing. I don't have any serious injury or something like that. I was very focused in the gym every day. The training camp was like hard. It was one of the toughest training camps I had. So I don't know, man. Maybe this training camp, I need to do something different. You never know. I've been talking with a lot of people. Like, hey, man. I mean, even with this result in this fight, I feel like you evolved too much. Just you need to make a better game plan for the next one and see what happens. But I feel ready.
And something I did want to bring up too, because obviously we talked about it before as well. So I do a show with Henry Cejudo. Obviously, there's a history with Henry Cejudo, the Triple C and Schmo show. He's a friend of mine. He's been a friend of yours. And
you love it.
Hey, I'm a business guy. You can appreciate that, man. I'm trying to compete with ESPN. So yeah. One thing we talked last night, and he did want to say this because this isn't out there. This is not the cringe. This is the person. This is the human and stuff like that. There's certain things he wanted me to say, and all positive. And I just want to start by saying this, and this is on behalf of Henry, and it was on speakerphone. Henry, Helen heard the whole thing. She heard the whole thing. But basically, him working with Figgy, all business, in the sense that nothing personal whatsoever. It's Figgy had a dream, a legacy that he wants to achieve, and Henry can relate to that of his own, and he helped him. From that standpoint, obviously ESPN's done their stories and stuff like that about the history and whatnot. And you're a great human that no one's questioning that whatsoever. I think at the time, you know, with the whole Benavidez thing and his all pop and everything like that, he didn't understand and he felt hurt. But in the past few months, he's been a father and he's had a daughter for the first time. And something that you can relate to, what he couldn't have at this specific time, it's like he didn't realize what it's like to have a family and have responsibilities. And when you had the choice into training with Joe for that fight and everything like that, he didn't understand at that time. What he said to me last night, which is the first time I ever heard, he's like, I can understand. As a father now, I understand what he was going through. And all this stuff, when it's all said and done, all business, Brandon's a great guy. Always friends, always at heart. I want to make amends when this is all said and done. And, you know, he likes you and then nothing's ever personal. And that's just what he wanted to relay.
Man, you know, that's awesome because at the end of the day, everybody has his own version of the history, right? I mean, maybe, I don't know if the Henry Cejudo, the human being, or Henry Cejudo, the cringe triple C, is talking in some points of this version. But I mean, talking about my version of the history, I mean, I remember that moment in my life, because that was after the Ultimate Fighter. I fought in short notice against Luis Smolka. Actually, it's funny because Jason loved that fight. Just kidding.
You would bring that up right now, wouldn't you?
Another client.
No. It's a funny story, I'll tell you.
So,
okay. Not on the podcast, off the podcast.
I can tell you whenever, but I'll tell you.
I think we gotta add that. Okay. Yeah.
So yes, I get the short notice fight against Luis Smolka, and after that, like a few weeks after, my coach called me and said, "Hey, I have another fight for you in the two finale, that finale with Henry and Joe, and against Ryan Benoit." And I said, "Oh, let's go, okay." But in that moment, all my training partners went to Mexico City. All my training partners from Tijuana went to Mexico City because the finale of the Ultimate Fighter Latin America third season was there in Mexico City. And so they needed to train in elevation, you know, because you know again Mexico City is hard, man. If you don't prepare yourself for the fight in elevation, is you're signing your deck right there. So everybody was there. So in Tijuana, I was alone. And, you know, in that moment, Henry was training with Pantoja in Arizona. So I'm like, man, I don't want to train with him. You know, I don't want to train with him. So I was completely alone in that moment. Like, man, what can I do? After the Ultimate Fighter, I was talking with myself and saying, like, man, I mean, I don't want to train with Henry, and I don't want to train with Joe. But in that moment, when you are alone, and like you say, I had my daughter, Madison, yes. In that moment, I was like, man, this is my career. And this is not just my career. This is my family, man. And a lot of people can put their own opinion in everything and in life, and more in this era where you have a really easy opinion with social media. But anybody thinks about your life, man. So, man, I took my decisions. I went with Joe. And obviously, if I say this to Henry, maybe he don't believe in this. But, man, Joe was a really professional, because I was even weird because when we went, like, together, he don't want to talk nothing about Henry when I was with him. You know, we are, like, I don't know, maybe in the kitchen, like, eating breakfast, I don't know, and all the team was there, and it was weird because I was there, and Joe wouldn't say nothing about Henry or the game plan, or he never asked me nothing about him, you know? And I understand it's really hard to believe, but I don't know, man. The people can see I'm just trying to be very honest always. But talking about, you know, the family, when you understand the life, when you're not alone, yeah, I mean, everything changed.
And clearly he was not in that state of mind a few years ago, and now his entire life changed. And I've never heard anyone say a bad thing about Joe Benavidez, like one of the nicest guys around, yeah. Just like you.
Great human.
Guys are really, you know, and obviously talking about Joseph, I mean, I can't lie with you, man. I mean, he's amazing. He's a really nice guy. And actually, right now, I talk with him, like, man, I don't know what happened. I don't know. I'm going to be out of all this drama. Like, man, like, coach, sorry. I don't want to put you in troubles. But, yeah. Man.
What's the Luis Smolka story? I'm going to leave you off the hook on that.
We have time to listen.
Yeah.
So that was October of 2016.
Yep.
And at the time, we were under the impression, had Lewis won, he would have gotten a title shot. He was supposed to fight Pettis, right? So we were still assuming, with Brandon coming in, well, if we get this win, we've been on a pretty good win streak, that we'd get the title shot. At the time, you know, I might have had, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 UFC clients. It wasn't very much back then. You know, we were really robbing Peter to pay Paul back then. And so I was dating my wife at the time for maybe 3 or 4 months at that time. And so, you know, Brandon came in, had a phenomenal performance, you know. Obviously, I'm devastated at the time because wow. Lewis and I, for many of you that know, we've been through hell and back together. Like, Lewis is family to me. Like, I love him and Yumi to death, and Lucy, my goddaughter. So I came home and I was a real poor sport, and Elisa's family and Elisa were just giggity goo over Brandon, right? Like, man, Brandon is so nice and he was so sweet, and man, you gotta love him, huh? And this and that. And I don't think they really understand like how hard the losses are in this sport. And I was almost to the point like, you know, F you guys, you know, like I don't want to hear about any of this right now. Leave me alone. And so Brandon was Elisa's favorite fighter. Like she was in his DMs, like, hey, you don't know me, but I think you and my husband work really good together. And she'd always be like, oh, Brandon's on this card. And I'd always be kind of jaded, like, man, what's with you and Brandon? Like, man, we're team, you know, like, I'm still bitter about the loss with Smoka, you know? So it's just kind of funny because even the day that Cheeto called me and said, hey, Brandon's going to call you, I think he needs management. My wife was like so excited. Put it on speaker. That's my client. I'm like, that's not your client. You know? Like, what are you talking about? But she like loved him, like would follow all his fights. Like, you know, we would, I think one time, I don't think we even had a guy on the card and she wanted to watch because Brandon was fighting. And I was like, it's a weekend off. What are you talking about? You know? So it's just funny because her family still gives me crap about it to this day. Like, see, we picked a winner. We knew he was going to be a good kid and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, guys, whatever, you know, like.
But it's crazy too, because 108 clients, but yeah. Everybody is so respectful and yeah. They always fight and they always fight each other, which, man, that's a beast to manage and a beast to maintain. But you guys do a good job doing it. Great job doing
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Underrated.
Thank you. Yeah, it's real simple. You just treat every client as individual and you give them your best. You love them to death. What they have to do inside the cage, if they have to fight each other, that's their 15 minutes. It doesn't change what I do outside of the cage. They're still going to get all the love and attention and my best efforts and Jacob and Jeremy and Joe and Lance and Ed, the whole team. So it's really it's easy for us.
And you had to move to Vegas during the pandemic too, because literally every single weekend, not just the UFC, LFA, all the different organizations, you have guys going all the time.
Yeah.
But here at the Apex, especially when there's all these fight nights, even one this week I'm so excited for. It's the Ultimate Fighter. Brian Battle is finally fighting. Tayshawn Gore. I mean, that fight, I was stoked to see that fight and so down when Gore had to pull out for injury. And now this weekend, if people aren't paying attention to that fight night, I cannot wait for Pooh Bear to finally fight.
Yes.
This is his first fight since the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
You know, Pooh Bear kind of reminds me a lot of Brandon, just his upbringing and just his kind of like being very underrated on tough. And he's just one of those kids that just has big heart, you know, just so tough and big heart, and he's evolving. And he looks in phenomenal shape already for this camp. So I'm just real excited to see him finally have I think now he's able to train as a professional, right, coming off the show and getting the finances and stuff. So I'm very happy for him.
And next weekend, I believe Alex Perez is fighting Matt Schnell.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another one of those contender fights. It's another one. Flyweight.
It's another one, you know. So it's funny because bringing what you said about all the guys, like I think Alex was the first one to text me after the fight, you know, and he had nothing but positive things to say, and he was the one saying Brandon won. And, you know, that's kind of crazy to say, right, because these guys are they're neck and neck in the division. That's the truth of the matter, right? I mean, even for a Christmas gift, he knows I love his daughters to death. He got me a mug with the three girls on the mug and stuff. Alex did, you know, and I just shows you that's what makes me most happy with the camaraderie of the team. You know, I know there's going to be times they're going to have to fight, and that's inside the cage, but I'm glad we're not bad-mouthing or we're always, you know, they understand it's just a sport and it's a business. And, you know, I felt like, you know, he was one of the first people. It's funny I face this now. Yumi Lewis's wife caught my eye in the arena to, like, you know, say, is she like sorry, and to give me like kind of like just saying how much she loved us when I was next to Shirley. And she texted me, and it was Alex second. So isn't that crazy? Out of all the things you would think, right, it'd probably be other people that would be texting me first. But that night, I didn't get very many text messages. So.
Yeah, I saw that tweet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
You know, like, you see that stuff.
No, it's not crazy. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fine.
You see that. You've seen those posts before, like, you know, on Instagram and stuff. But until you actually live it, you don't understand it. Like when Brandon won, it literally took me like 3 days. It was hundreds. I mean, people from high school. I mean, it was amazing. I was a great kid.
From high school?
From high school. Dude, I saw you on TV. You're in the octagon. Man, I love that freaking kid. I didn't know you repped him. Man, I'm so happy for you. And so you're just trying to respond to everyone. We lost. It was like the people that, you know, very small in the circle, right? The Perez's, the Smoker, the people that are in the business that know how gutting this is right now, right? And
But isn't that so interesting too? And you notice that with people as well. Everyone wants to be associated with a winner. Or if they perceive you doing well, they just want to jump on the train and everything. Yeah. But then if you're quiet, if you're out of the limelight for a few weeks, you're silent, or if you get a loss and you're not on top, but people just want to be associated with winning and stuff like that. Do you ever find it difficult to balance between how fake people are and then the real people? Because you know you get a mix of it. You especially,
he does, yeah.
especially in the past few months of your life, past year and a half of your life, really.
Man, that is a nice question because... No, you know what? Actually, I feel like when I was 2018, you know, I always say the same, like my worst year of my life. That gave me like a lot of experience because I remember before that year, like media, everything was like on my name, like, you know, because I was the main event in Mexico City against Pérez. Then I went to Chile against Pantoja. All the media was like there. And after when I lost the two fights, I was like along just with my family and my daughters and my wife. My parents, obviously, my training partners, but that's it, okay? So that in that moment, I was younger with less experience. I feel like very, very bad. But right now, I'm enjoying too much. Like, you know, I'm very positive. Like, I don't went to Mexico City for media tours. I don't did nothing. Like, I can go with my I spend a little bit more time with my family. I'm just trying to use these parts to stay positive. You know, because at the end of the day, I know my people. I know the people around me who are like, who really love me. You know, again, in this era, everybody has a very easy opinion because social media, okay? And I understand if I had haters, like in the last, they don't have any material against me since 2019. So they need something, right?
And someone that keeps it real too, Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
I think, did you see his tweet?
Yeah, he's awesome, right? I mean, I met him after, you know, in Arizona. Yeah. He was like awesome with me. And I always say the same because maybe the people can speak like, oh, this guy is a gangster. He's the, you know, the tough guy. And Brandon Moreno is that skinny little kid, like always smiling and be an asshole with everybody, making jokes. But the guy was like awesome since the first time. So I'm starting to talk a little bit with him. Then we did like a photo shoot like a few months ago, something like that. I don't remember well. But I had the opportunity to talk a little bit more with him. And, you know, the guy is awesome and he supports me. And obviously I'm working with Represent. So it's another connection we have together. So, yeah, I don't want to say like, oh, he's a close friend or a friend or something. But, I mean, he's like by my side. That's awesome.
Someone else you work with, too. It's a sponsor of our show. I saw you do a photo shoot with them, too. Sheath Underwear. How comfortable are those Sheath Underwears? You guys probably have a bunch of it. But I still have more gifts for you guys, more underwear too. You can't get enough of the Sheath underwear. But how good is it? And maybe it was a little weird at first, separating the pouch from the balls, but how nice are those?
Those ones are one of my favorites, this color. I love
it. When are they making the Brandon Moreno limited edition ones?
They have one with a collab with Cowboy, right? Con Cowboy. I think so. I don't remember. Hey, they need it, Chief. We need to do something more special.
100%. They're great underwear.
But man, I'm very comfortable. I'm, obviously, the people need to feel it first because the idea sounds like weird. Like, oh, but man, I don't know. It's weird to talk a little bit more.
Yeah,
but
I remember it's very like, comfortable. When Jacob said, like, what's the big deal? And I was like, oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. I mean, but especially someone who's active all the time and living in Vegas in the summertime, like a ball stick in a hot climate, they're great. Check them out, sheathunderwear.com. That's promo awesome. Code SHMO, 20% off. But what's the deal with Legos, man? How the hell did they not sponsor this guy? If there's ever a perfect athlete, like we're staring at him.
It's so funny you bring this up because I have a couple clients, Orion and Louis Cosi, were in a group chat with Jacob, and they were just talking about, man, this is baloney. They should be sponsoring you guys. And I think the response we got was that Brandon doesn't identify with their target audience. Like, I guess it's children, you know? And Orion said something funny. What's the other brand? Builder Blocks or something?
Yeah.
He was like, you should go to them and see what that audience is. You know, they're joking around. And I was just like, guys, calm down. It'll all come to fruition in time. They'll see the power of Brandon Moreno.
Yeah.
Man, you know, I mean, obviously it's very nice when you love a brand, because I love Lego, man. You know, like, that's it. I mean, I don't, if they give me money and they give me sets, like, come on, I love it. But I really love the brand, and I spend some time building Legos to relax myself. But, man, you know, actually, Lego has a lot of targets, different targets, you know. Actually, they made an a TV show, Lego Masters. They are like professional Lego builders doing an amazing masterpieces. I'm not in that area, obviously, but that's awesome. They have a lot of targets. Hopefully, in the future, man. I mean,
I guarantee you, like, if they just did a dedicated MMA, like, you know, edition, like they do for a Star Wars edition, and made you the face of it, yeah. Like, they could bring in so many different yeah. fans. Because I'm someone who grew up building Legos all the time. And obviously, you get to an age where you stop because of, you know, responsibility. Some of us, I guess, or some of us, different responsibilities, and you allocate your time. But I guarantee you that you'd have such a loyal MMA audience if you were leading the charge for Legos.
Just say it. And
they need to listen to that.
Man. Oh, man, I mean, I spent too much money in Lego, so hopefully they can help me in the future.
I always wonder, like, when he first started dating Shirley, did he, like, she, like, come over and, like, oh, here's my Lego set, you know? And she's like, oh, cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to be a really confident man to
have the Legos.
Yeah. I don't care. I mean,
yeah, see?
But is your daughter's as enthusiastic about Legos as you? Because they're approaching that age where... Yeah, you know.
They had... I mean, my older daughter had some seasons, like, building Legos with me. But she's like, she just wanna build the Lego and then start to destroy everything or live there. And then my other daughter's, Megan, the middle one, starts to destroy everything. But yeah, you know.
Leading up to the fight, just to segue to something too, the Schmo asked Dana White, I thought it was a pretty good question at the press conference, if he could foresee a situation where there'd be another Brandon Moreno, where he has someone signed to the UFC and he cuts them and they become a champion. He didn't answer that. I mean, yeah, I don't blame him. No. You know, distracting everything like that. And you said, I'm still sad about that. Still need to talk to him. I'm assuming you haven't had the opportunity to do that. But fuck, I don't ever see a scenario where that can happen again. I mean, can you?
The story is pretty amazing. I movie. Think, yes, it's. I've said this before. It's a movie. It really is, and it will be once we get this quadrilogy done. But, you know, a lot of moving parts had to happen, right? Like the removal of the flyweight division because, you know, had that not happened, he probably wouldn't have been cut, right? They would have kept him. You know, he had a good record in the UFC. There's just so many things. Like even when you guys are talking about, you know, the fans, when you win, when you lose, like I remember his first fight outside the UFC in LFA. I remember thinking like, man, this guy was main event in Mexico City. We're at Casino Morongo in California. He's warming up outside in a tent with a little mat space. He rolled his ankle a few minutes before the fight. I was all nervous. Like I was having a meltdown. I think he realized you know, like, well, it's my wife's favorite fighter. She's already drilling me on the opponent, on the matchup, what we're doing. She's like, you know, give me the fifth degree. I'm like, hey, calm down, woman. It's going to be okay. And I remember it was like Raul and your brother.
Yeah.
And I think Shirley was in the stands.
Yes.
And we were fighting Michael Perez, great guy, comes from a great gym, Kings MMA. But, I mean, they had, like, the Gracie train, right? They had everyone there and all the fans. And I remember just thinking, like, oh, my God. I remember being so nervous I threw up backstage. I really did because in my head I was thinking, mind you, at this point, I'd already done the rebuild of Lewis Mocha, okay? 3 wins in 10 months. He lost 4 straight in the UFC, got cut, alcoholism, got him sober at my house, got him back in the UFC. That was November of 2018. Fast forward, we're in 2019. And I know a loss here could be the nail in the coffin. And people don't realize that. Everyone in the crowd probably has no idea. Like, oh, cool, Brandon Moreno's here. But he's got 2 people in his corner, warming outside in a tent, months from being a main event of a UFC. Hardly any fans there. No one's really cheering for him. And it's just crazy. You'll never know. But for me, that's one of the most pivotal moments of my whole career. Like, if you never looked at something and thought, oh, my gosh, everything was on a line for him. He was backstage laughing. I remember he was like, oh, he was raising his hands, champion. He's messing around with me. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad you're having fun, bro, because – I'm sweating this big time, you know, like I'm over here nervous as can be. I'd already had talks with the UFC, so I knew there were kind of some grumblings about them bringing back the flyweight division. So now it kind of added steam to how important this fight was. And he came back, Brandon 2.0 that night, and he looked amazing. He didn't look any nerves in the cage. He fought phenomenally. And then Mick called me, it was the next day, right? We were talking. Yeah. I called you at Disneyland and said, you're back in the UFC.
You told me that.
And it was just like, dude, what a moment, you know, like you're just sitting back thinking like, it's just crazy, kind of go off what you're saying. Like, could it ever happen? I don't know. Like, that's such a – and you got to think LFA, credit to them. They don't really sign UFC veterans, right? Like, their
MO is we're going to build young prospects up. And I remember like looking at Jeremy, my partner, going like, dude, what the hell are we going to do with Brandon? You made an offer of Combate. We didn't want to do that. And Jeremy's like, let me talk to Lefebvre. Let me see if I get this fight, And he jumped all over it. There's a lot of things you look back on, like, man, one decision here, one thing there. You just don't know, you know? If Mick doesn't get a hair up his ass and go, hey, we're going to bring the flyweight division back. Originally, they were talking about doing a tournament. They were going to do a 16-man ninja tournament. You know, they're doing this whole thing.
UFC doesn't do tournament like
that. That was the idea. Mick was spitballing. Sorry, Mick, I don't know if I was supposed to say this. But, yeah. But we were spitballing this, and I'm like, dude, just bring him back, because I'd always been flyweight heavy, right? I had Ian McCall to start in the original four. I've always been heavy on the flyweights. And I doubled down. Brandon, Alex, Brandon Royval, all those guys I've had. You know, I mean, I stayed with him through all the cuts and everything, you know? So, yeah, when he was talking, I'm like, dude, do anything. Do a 16-man tournament. Do whatever the hell you want to do. Just bring him back, you know? And it's just crazy, because I don't know if it could ever happen like that again, to see someone like Brandon go from that high to that low, right? From being a main event to being cut that fast. I don't think it'd happen unless you were to cut a division. I don't see it, right? Because usually if you're main eventing, you probably have a few fight grace, right? You probably have space to lose a couple. You're not going to get cut from that, right? He lost to Pantoja. You're out.
It's one of a kind situation.
Yeah,
it has to be.
What?
That's nuts. It's absolutely crazy.
And now, do you guys ever think where it's like the quadrilogy? It's going to happen. More history in the making. Yeah. A movie in the making.
Yeah.
Imagine, hey. I dream with that, a movie of Brandon Moreno. Hey,
it's gonna happen. I'm telling you this right now.
I need to put my manager to work there.
No, it is. your manager is already working on it, but the story's still being written. But it will happen. It will happen.
And someone else that you manage too, that's gonna get a title shot coming up too. I wanted to bring him up, Korean Zombie,
KZ,
against Volkanovski.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It's awesome. Yeah.
That's great too. And then speaking of how small this sport really is too. He trains out of Fight Ready over there in Arizona, Coach Eddie Chan, stuff like that. Yeah. Obviously, that's the rivalry there, but like Coach Eddie's a great guy. And I know it's not a part of that, too. He was not in the corner specifically. Yeah. It's a gym. They have different coaches and stuff like that. But the way the relationships are and the way you can compartmentalize the differences between camps and stuff like that, that just shows you where this sport is and how it's growing and just the quality of humans that are really involved with it.
I met Eddie Chow 11 years ago, 12 years ago. I remember when he had one fighter in his whole gym, when he was making the majority of his money teaching Taekwondo to the children. So to see him have his moments with Cejudo, to see him have moments with KZ or Figueredo, I told him, like, hey, man, listen, it sucks that we're across the cage from each other, obviously, you know, because he's with Figueredo and I'm with Brandon. But two guys coming from the same neck of the woods of Anaheim and Diamond Bar and coming all the way there, like, I'm proud of you, you know. And I text him after the fight. I love you, Coach. Great job. See you soon.
So go back to Zombie's immediate reaction when he found out that Holloway's out of this fight, like he's up next. Like, what's his immediate reaction?
So let's backtrack. So when I think it was the first time Volkanovski and Ortega got pushed back, right? There were talks of keeping that fight on. We had gotten a phone call, like, hey, could you be ready? And I called Zombie, and he was like, yeah. And I remember in that phone call, he said, hey, Jay, listen to me. Anytime they call for a title fight, because you know the time difference, sometimes he doesn't answer. He said, dude, I don't care if it's a week, 2 weeks, 3 minutes, 3 hours, I'm in. I'm like, okay. So when the thing happened, I texted Sean. I said, hey, Zombie's in. He goes, okay, then. Let's get going. And I said, okay, cool. Call me, you know, and that's kind of how it happened. And I woke up Zombie. He FaceTimed him. He's like in bed, you know, like, hey, bro, I got a title shot. He's like, oh, great, you know, and started making accommodations to come to Arizona. And, you know, Zombie's another one. Like, he's another great guy, man. Just a great family guy. Like, I'm really lucky. I have the best guys. Like, they're so amazing. They're just honestly the best people.
It's so unpredictable, the sport, too, because anything could happen. Somebody could pull out. You got to stay ready. You got to be ready. And when your name is called, you got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what makes it fun, for sure. Another person I wanted to bring up, too, Chito Vera.
Yeah.
Love him. Yeah. Like, what's his situation? Where are we at with him getting him a fight next?
I mean, we're ready. There was small dialogue of main eventing February 19th a few weeks back. That didn't work out. You know, when you get into the rankings, it gets kind of tough, right? Because there's only so many people ahead of you. So you kind of have to kind of log jams a little bit, right? There's only four or five people that you can truly fight at any given time. So that's the hard part. But he's ready to go. Like, he's calling me every day. Like, he'll fight this weekend if I call them. Like, life is a training camp for Chito Vera, and I respect the hell out of him for it. But, you know, we're looking for something big, you know, coming off Edgar. You know, we want someone in that top five. I really don't care who it is, to be honest. You know what I mean? But whoever wants to get, you know, Rob Font, Dominic Cruz, Sanhagen, where are they at? We're ready, you know? So, and I say that respectfully to all those guys, but I mean, we're ready to take those guys on.
And if it wasn't for some reason one of those guys in the top five, top seven, someone who's now ranked, who wasn't previously ranked, who he's got to win over, who doesn't really like to acknowledge it, and a lot of your guys in the bantamweight division call this guy out, they don't get that fight, is Sean O'Malley. I feel like that fight's way too big to not happen at some point, one way or another. That rematch, right?
When Sean's ready to do it again, we will.
And I mean, has that ever been offered again? Like,
yes, and we've said yes.
And ooh, it's just been on his side just saying ooh, no to it.
I can't speculate what goes on their side or their dialogue. You know, I have a lot of respect for Sean and his people, but we're ready. I mean, has Chito Vera ever said no?
No.
Don't tempt Chito with a good time.
What about like Dominic Cruz? Because I know his name's been floated out there too, but it was actually before his most recent victory. Yeah, but
it would be an honor. We've had discussions in the past. You know, I know Dom has a very busy schedule. You know, he's very successful in commentating and doing his thing. And, you know, it'd be an honor to fight him too, you know. I mean, guys like Chito and Brandon, like, it blows my mind. It blows my mind if you really want to do a deep dive on their history from The Ultimate Fighter and kind of where they're coming from and, you know, not being very highly touted as one of the top prospects in Latin America, and to see how far they both have come. You know, like, we're talking about Chito Vera fighting Dominic Cruz. If you'd have told me this 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, you'd be like, I don't know. You know, we're coming along. We're doing our thing. But I truly believe it's not who's good, it's who's left. I truly believe that in this business, that's what really drives those guys.
Yeah. One thing that is a huge topic and stuff like that, we talked about it. This is a business, and there's so much value that's brought to the table. And sometimes when people report what people's compensations are, there are so many bonuses and things that people don't get to see. And like, for example, even let's talk about Brandon too. After he became champion, he went on this entire media tour throughout all of Mexico, throughout the United States, like
fun.
To the likes of what the UFC would do with a Conor McGregor and a Ronda Rousey. I can't think of anyone the past couple of years they've done that with you, and I know how easy you are to work with, and it just explodes. But the side of it that people don't see, because everyone's just focusing on the negative with UFC, is the opportunities that it opens up for you outside of it, the revenue that is drawn to you. And I think just someone from your shoes and representing 180 of these guys in this organization, I think there's a lot of things that you see that, you know, you can't talk about too, because it's a business and you understand it. And I think just for the audience listening too, it's like, it's not just, oh, let's just shit on the UFC. There's a lot of positives they bring and a lot of revenue that people don't see on pen to paper, and all the numbers that people are looking at, they don't tell the whole story.
Yeah. Like, for example, you brought up the media tour. I remember meeting with Monster. We met with Hans the Thursday before your fight, went out to lunch. And I remember he was joking, are you ready for this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. We're in Phoenix, you know? I'm like, we're going to do this. So we did the deal with Monster. And I think at the time you were at 240,000 followers, I believe. I believe that's where we were at, give or take. I think within 42, 43 days of his fight, we broke 1 million. And to sit here, I mean, obviously, Brandon did great performance in the cage, you know, and he did his part as well. But you can't sit there and say that the UFC didn't do their part either and taking us around the world and getting us the media tour and getting us all those things. It definitely added help. It definitely, you know, you get the 800-pound gorilla behind you, it can really do good things. I think sometimes it goes unnoticed. And I know I'm very grateful. Lillian from the UFC, I mean, and Juan, they did a phenomenal job for us. And you know the name of the game. The following right now is a large part of how you earn your income outside of the cage. And so they definitely helped us out a lot. And, you know, sometimes it's tough too. Like even like the, you know, CSAC just released the pays for the fighters. And I think a lot of those numbers were off. And I'm not sure why, but I mean, like, a lot of people are asking me, did Brandon make this and that? Like, guys, I'm not discussing Brandon's money, but those numbers are inaccurate, you know?
Was it like the bases that were off or the full compensation? Like
the base pays were off.
I just wonder where they get that information and the confidence to release it if it's not accurate. I mean, you would know because you see it.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, I just feel like, you know, we're very happy the UFC's done right by us, so...
And it's, and actually it's like very tough, like, because like you say, like everybody's like everything negative against the company. But I mean, talking about my specific situation, I mean, they are building a brand with me, man. I mean, I'm very happy because yes, like Jason said, like before the fight in Arizona, like a few days before, like my social media was like, you know, good numbers. But after the fight, but after the promotion and after everything, the media tours, I mean, social media explode like hard. And, you know, right now I'm very happy. So and to me, it's very uncomfortable when I need to talk with money or something like that. Because in my, you know, I'm from Mexico and it's hard, you know. I mean, I love my country. I love the traditions. I love my culture. I love Tijuana. I love my city. But, I mean, it's real. You know, in some point, my country is a little bit dangerous. My family is there. My parents are there in Tijuana. I don't like to talk too much about money or try to put something in social media talking about, like, something. But, I mean, right now I'm very happy. And I'm obviously, at the same time, trying to be very smart with the money and, you know, trying to build my legacy and leave something nice for my daughters and, you know, and my family.
And what does bother me when people talk about money and they compare boxing to mixed martial arts is they always bring up Tyson Fury. They always bring up Canelo,
of course,
the guys at the top. But they don't talk about the guys in the undercards, the guys at the very bottom, what they're making. I've never seen people use that argument and compare it to the people at the just getting into the UFC. And that kind of is what really bothers me, too. And they don't realize people. They don't talk about the frequency of events that fighters – you know, have the opportunity to fight and to make. And just when the world was shut down, what was going on?
That was the one thing that bothered me was I felt like, you know, Dana White and the UFC and Hunter and all of them, they were trailblazers. They found a path and they found a way that I think a lot of other sport leagues try to emulate the protocols that they had implemented. And I felt like they're, you know, they took a lot of heat in the media for trying to do events during the pandemic and trying to find a way to produce an income during the pandemic for these fighters. And I felt like, okay, you want to criticize them or kind of question what they're doing right now. But then when it worked, no one did anything to say, hey, what they did worked. They didn't put anyone's health in risk, right? Like they had a great system that worked. If anyone tests positive, they removed them, you know, quarantined them and took care of it. I just feel like if you're going to be critical of people, that's fine, but you better come back with the praise if they turn out to be right, I guess is my thing. You know, it's just like, hey, like, come on, man. Like, you got to give credit where credit is due.
Everybody wants more money, right? Everyone's going to talk about money, but like from your perspective, what can improve over time? What can be done to make things more? Is it healthcare? Is it like, what is the answer that you could see from your side to improve things?
I think a lot of times you just have to realize how young the sport is. I think this is year 20. We're going on year 20. November will be year 29, right?
Yep.
I mean, if you look at where other sports were 29 years into their, you know, into the thing, you'll see that, man, where was baseball 29 years in? I believe guys were still working winter jobs.
Yeah.
You know, you look at That's NFL true. And you look at, you know, NFL, I mean, I think their bargaining agreements, it took a long time, right? And it took when they're merging in the leagues, and a lot had to happen. And so I guess I tend to look at the long picture, the big picture and everything, and just understand, you know, it's going to take time for everything to keep growing and keep evolving. And for me, I feel like I've always had good relationships with the UFC. Obviously, you know, we negotiate, but I like to keep that behind closed doors. You know, I don't really believe in negotiating publicly. I don't think that ever ends well.
That's true. The one thing that is improving that I noticed from our perspective, and I know you'd agree to it, is the science, is the technology.
Yeah.
You have things like the PI. You have things like nutrition, weight cutting, and stuff like that. We talk about how young this sport is, going on 29 years young. Think about the first couple of generations doing the sport, going to this gym for jiu-jitsu, this gym for boxing, you know, this gym for wrestling. And now you have teams that do everything together. You have nutrition that can be knocked down, training, sleep, like things like the Whoop, things like the Oura Ring, and things that are made available to you guys just by being a part of an organization. Those things are improving, the smartness of training and when to not train. And I think that part of fighter safety and health is not talked about enough.
Agreed. I think the UFC's done a phenomenal job with that.
I mean, I think, like, anybody talk about it, like, anybody talk about the facilities UFC give me, you know, and maybe a lot of people hear this, like, he's paying a little bit more to say good things about the company. But I promise, no. Anybody talk about the facility of, for example, the Performance Institute, man, I mean, they are paying for physical therapy. I go for physical therapy every day. Even if I just feel like sore, I go there and I have something to do, okay? I have the nutritionist, the dietitian there, you know, the strength and conditioning. Yes, you need to bring your own coaches to do your job and your own training partners. But, I mean, man, they give me like free food every day. I mean, and sometimes I don't like, I prefer to eat in my house because I love the food of my wife. But I mean, I have food free every day. So that's awesome. I mean, that helps too much for the fighters who are like maybe in the prelims, you know, like this guy's helps too much. I mean, obviously it helps to me too. So that's awesome.
What would you say for fighters coming up and stuff like that? Like, what's the best advice that you guys are learning about building your brand? Because I think everyone in this room, we can all agree that building your brand is a pivotal thing, especially in this day and age we live in with social media. But what advice from your side of things, being in the managerial position, and your advice being freaking flyweight champion, one of the most popular fighters in the entire roster?
My advice would just be to be yourself. I think we kind of fell into, I kind of call it the trash talk era, right? Where Conor was so good at it. He was so natural at it, right? And he came in with the suits. And I think some of the guys were trying to emulate that again instead of just being themselves. And I just feel like when you're yourself, you don't have to sell anything. People will resonate with you and people will get behind you. I think Brandon's the perfect example of that. I mean, he's a family man that plays with Legos and people love him, you know? People resonate with that. He's just himself. And I think that's why I think the Diaz brothers are so revered, right? They just are who they are. They're just themselves. And I feel like when you can do that, you know, you'll be fine. I think this is the good guy era right now. The good guy era is kind of coming right, the Oliveira, Charles Oliveira, you know, Dustin Poirier, Brandon, Glover Teixeira. You have a lot of the good guy era is coming in where people are really liking to see these guys come in and have their success.
Man, that's it? No, I mean, yes, I mean, I feel like I don't need to add nothing more. I mean, I like saving a lot of energy, just being myself, like, you know. I love when, for example, in Fight Week, watch all the fighters, like, making way, like, very serious, like, at me, it's like, just enjoying the moment, you know, just trying to enjoy the moment with the media, making jokes, and, you know, everybody getting a nice time. I don't know, man. I'm just trying to be myself. And I'm just trying to be very smart and be a family guy. I'm a human being, and sometimes it's not like always the Brandon Moreno smiling every time, definitely. But if I can be that guy, like, the most part of my time, like, I will, right? And yeah, I definitely is the good guy era. That's why Shelson hate me.
Chael, the king of trash talking. I always am fascinated by the switch, you know. It's so tense leading up to the fight. And the second that the fight is over, the bromance, yeah, everything is off. You know, everything behind the stages, the back. It's like, it's like, how long does that kumbaya last, right? Because you enjoy that kumbaya. And then it's like when Monday hits, it's all back to the intensity, the rivals. It's like we're in camp here and there. But I just love, because this is such a close knit. The circle is so damn tiny in this sport. It's so hard for people on the outside, or they're just watching now for the first time and becoming fans of it, to truly get it and immerse themselves in it, because it's just different. It's just so much different than the NFL, NBA, baseball, all that kind of stuff. And I know you have experience with a lot of the NFL guys and stuff like that and the different sides of things. So I know you definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it's one of a kind for sure. It's really weird when you think about it, right? Because, like, you see guys after, like, NFL games, they're, like, trading jerseys and they're, like, signing stuff and it's all fun and games. But a lot of times it's not like that with us, right? I mean, there's that brief moment of the bromance, but then, like you said, it goes back to the war and it goes back to, hey, let's do this again. And
I feel like that makes everything more, like, weird, because, I don't know, in a game, like NFL game, soccer, whatever, at the end of the day, it's a game, right? Like, you can, like, be nice with everybody after the game. But, I mean, here we are trying to kill the other guy. If not, the referee is not there, we are trying to kill the other guy. And after that, they start to, hey, good job, amazing, nice fight. You know, it's weird, but I love it. To me, I feel like in the future, I will, like, a lot of problems with that, because I feel like I have a lot of friends in the media. Like, in my division, I have a lot of friends. With the bantams, I have a lot of friends. I'm just trying to enjoy my job here, man.
And circling back to the quadrilogy, like how it started, ideally for you both, is it May, right, that you would like to get back in there, or is there kind of a time frame?
Say when.
I'm ready.
Say when.
I literally was like trying to fight three times this year, like January, June, and December was the original plan. But I mean, I'm just gonna fight for the title. I don't care. I mean, I can fight like this weekend.
So you get the title back, ideally. Who do you think would be the first person that you would defend the title against?
No, just
kidding. What's the word for five? What's the word for five?
But the last time when I say I don't want to see Figueroa anymore, I fought against like twice.
Don't
so
jinx it.
I don't want to say nothing, man. But definitely Askarov against Cara Francis, an important fight. Pantoja, you know, it's a nice history too, because will be another trilogy, right? And he beat me twice before in the past, so it's another good fight. But I feel like, yeah, it can be like Askarov the winner between Askarov and France.
Had Cody Garbrandt win that fight, you think they'd give him that immediate title shot?
100%.
Just because of the name value and everything?
That's a good win too. It's a good win too. Cara Francis is very, very game opponent, very talented, you know, top 10 guy.
And it's interesting it wasn't reciprocated, you know, especially because he's the one who knocked him out and he didn't get the title shot after that.
I mean, I think too, though, that he wasn't ranked, so it's kind of hard to jump the line,
right?
Where if Cody would have entered the rankings, it's a little bit different than you kind of, you know, Cody was coming in to take his ranking, right? Kaikar really couldn't get much out of that fight, I feel like.
Kind of like that lose-lose situation then.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, right? Like, I'm don't be wrong. I think it was a great play for Kai because it did get him the Askar fight. So there is benefit for him. But I think in that aspect, like you're saying, I don't think that was available for him.
For sure. Give us your big goal for 2022 outside of this quadrilogy, because obviously this is the top of the mountain. Give us something else. We talked about Zombie. Give us some goals for 2022.
For me, it's just to continue to stay process oriented. When you stay on the focus on the process, the results are there. You know, for me, it's always about serving and giving to the clients. I think as long as you keep your eyes on that, and I might have a great team that does that, we're going to be fine. You know, I want to hear "And New" twice this year, and I think we're going to once in April and once in May.
To me, it's get the title back, man, and do my job. I want to keep doing something. You know, was amazing last year. And I don't think about it in that moment, but when I started to watch all that new movement in Mexico and Latin America, was awesome to me. So I got the title, and after that, a lot of really good things for Mexico and Latin America started to happen. I mean, last event in UFC 270, I fought with my training partners together, right? Like in the same car in a pay-per-view event. That was awesome. So my main thing right now is to get the belt, but I want to keep growing the sport in my country, definitely.
Who will be the second Mexican UFC fighter to have a belt? Alexa Grasso, who do you think it will be?
Hey, she looks awesome in 125.
Yeah.
She looks awesome in 125. You know, I feel like Pantera is there. Maybe he needs a little bit more activity, but he's there. I mean, the last fight against Max Holloway?
Incredible.
Yes.
What? Yeah.
A huge, huge fight for him. Obviously, he lost, but I mean, the fight was awesome. So yeah, maybe Pantera, maybe Alexa. Other guys are coming, new generations, and that's it. I'm excited for that because other guys, younger than the other, obviously youngers, trying to do something in this, and we'll see what happens in the future. But I'm excited.
You're an inspiration for them.
Yeah,
thank you, man.
Now, speaking of inspiration, just want to give a quick shout out to Contenders Clothing, Rocky Balboa, our favorite boxer.
That.
She's got the Adrian shirt.
Okay.
Thank you for the hookup there, guys. We totally appreciate you hopping on
thank
the Schmozone
you.
Podcast.
Thank
you guys
you.
Are great guests and reoccurring guests.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Episode 93.
Okay. Wow.